Welcome to the Let's Talk Wheels, well, podcast. Normally, you guys are listening to us on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Matt Perrault, Mike Herzing, Eileen Falkenberg-Hall. We are all here for what is going to be a really fun beginning for a longer than normal conversation. The network show is limited by time constraints and commercials. This is more of a free-flowing opportunity for all of us to have conversations and talk. First and foremost, let me welcome in Mr. Mike Herzing. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, big guy. This is actually pretty exciting, and you don't have to shut me up anymore.
Right? Yeah, you guys can just talk and talk and talk. Eileen Falkenberg-Hall. Eileen, is this the first time you and I have talked on the air together?
Yes, on the air. It is the very first time.
Well, I'm really excited for this. This is going to be a lot of fun. And from my perspective, to kind of put a finishing touch on everything that we just went through in Texas when the three of us were together at the Texas Motor Press Association's Texas Off-Road Invitational, you guys deserve a ton of credit and a ton of thanks for everything you did, all the hours you guys put forth. The event, it's been so well received. I've seen so much media coming off of it, from social media, from print articles that have come up, videos that were shot on YouTube that I've seen. You guys have to be Mike, you guys got to be pretty proud of what happened, right?
Well, we are, and it's been great. I mean, I'm the president, so I get a lot of the goodies and accolades, but honest to gosh, it was everybody else. It was great. Eileen, obviously, is just mainlines caffeine because she's up all the time, and so it's got to be it. And she has, her husband is probably, you know, who knows where he is, but he's, you know, taking care of the kids, and she does nothing but the Texas Motor Press stuff for at least 6 weeks. And I talked to her two or three times a day, and it made, you know, my wife was getting a little bit worried here, but it was great, and it turned out so well. And Matt, you were sitting there, and you got a chance to see it from, you know, more of an attendee standpoint, and
yeah.
It worked out better than we could have dreamed.
Well, Eileen, one thing that I think the audience needs to know a little bit about, and obviously your resume is incredible, but how many events a year are you at for automotives?
So I traveled to somewhere around 60 automotive events last year. I tested about 250 different vehicles last year, be about the same this year. You know, I try and drive and fly to as much as I possibly can. Everything from Hyundais, Kias, and Fiats all the way up to Rolls-Royce and Bugatti and things like that. I try and get in and behind the wheel and be able to tell people the full picture of everything as much and as often as possible.
So given the experience you have going to that many events, how did you feel about the way that the Texas Off-Road Invitational came off?
Well, I think obviously as a first-year event, we had a lot to learn. But I feel incredibly blessed not just to have the support of the executive board, obviously with Mike as our president, but the support of the automotive community has been tremendous, from the automakers right down to the editorial writers who came. And, I mean, I'm just seeing video after video after video after interview. You know, we've got stories that are going through Yahoo Finance and stories that are going through Digital Trends and things like these huge publications that have billions of hits a year. And they're all because of this little event we had. And I just honestly feel honored to be a part of it and incredibly blessed, like I said, to have all these people put their little bit of faith in me and Mike and Alan as part of the board and show up for our event.
And Mike, you saw some great support for, I mean, there's a lot of logistical things you guys needed help with to get the thing to go off, right?
Well, you know, we were dragging people back and forth. And I had this fuel tank, which is a really awesome thing from a company called Transfer Flow. And we talked to him over the years at the show here. And we actually did a giveaway on it. And one of the guys in Nacogdoches won the tank. But the tank is a 50 gallons of diesel and 50 gallons of gasoline or whatever you want. It could be rocket fuel and the other side gasoline or whatever. And you put it in the back of your truck and you can go fuel up all your toys and stuff. And it's about a $2,000 deal. And it's all made in America. It works great. You ever see these pickup trucks that have the big tanks in the back, the diesels? Mm-hmm. So that way it extends their range, especially if you're pulling a trailer. Your fuel economy drops. And so you're having to pull in a heavy trailer. You're getting, you know, instead of getting 20 or 22 on the road, you're getting, you know, 12 because you're towing something that may be 10 or 12, 15,000 pounds. Well, these things add that. They'll also, for example, a lot of the Tundra owners, they have, they'll get, you know, the fuel economy isn't very good. The tank's all that big. You can add a 50-gallon tank underneath on a Tundra, okay? And so those kind of things were great. And Transfer Flow makes that. Everybody can find out more information on their stuff at transferflow.com. But I love that 50-50 tank because it can fill up toys on one side and tractors on the other. So that's kind of good. And also I want to mention the General Motors let us drive a 29, a brand new Escalade extended ESC, I think, or EXT. And it was the big suburban looking Escalade. And God, I didn't want to give it back. What do you think, Eileen? Do you ever driven one of those?
I have, and I've also driven the Yukon XL,
right,
which is a very similar size and
right,
things like that. But it was so helpful. GM really stepped up for us and gave us vehicles that were able to haul people back and forth, transfer, you know, everything we needed back and forth. And there was a lot of stuff. But also Infiniti did a great job. They provided,
yes,
a lot of vehicles for the people flying in from the airport to drive to the event and then back and forth. And I am so tremendously grateful to both General Motors and Infiniti for stepping up and helping us.
Well, also on that fuel tank, I had to put it in the back of something. So the Nissan folks, Steve Parrott and all the guys at Nissan, gave me a Titan Pro 4X, which is the big diesel XD, and it was you know, with a 5-liter Cummins engine, and people were loving it. And when you put that big tank in there, it's like it fit exactly.
Mm.
2 inches on each side. It was perfect. And what a nice truck. I didn't want to, you know, as far as when you're driving out of the Escalade, I actually like this one just as much. It was, you know, and I pulled it up next to an F-350 in one of the parking lots, and it was the same size, same length,
yeah,
same everything. I mean, this is a big Nissan. And Toyota doesn't build anything like that. None of the other, you know, other companies like that do. They're any of their competitors. It's like they're right there with the big three, you know, and what a nice truck. And, hey, thanks to Nissan for letting me use that.
Yeah, and if you guys haven't seen some of the coverage, I mean, one place you can go to YouTube and you can enter in Texas Motor Press Association. You can enter in Texas Off-Road Invitational. We've got a bunch of stuff up on Let's Talk Wheels that we've put up from a video perspective, but you can also follow us on Instagram, Texas Motor Press Association, or Let's Talk Wheels SBN on Instagram are two great places to get the content, the videos, the information that we put out there ourselves, but also other publications that have come through. And as we all both mentioned, I'll mention that it's really an interesting look after the fact to see how many different pieces of content hit the internet after the event. So it was really fun. The weather was great. We got lucky with, you know, thunderstorms and showers not hitting us too much,
yes,
in the area. So it was in the area around us, but not actually over the top of us in Huntsville, Texas. In General Sam's, if you guys are off-road enthusiasts and looking for a cool vacation, a different vacation, how cool is that place, Mike? I mean, General Sam's is awesome.
General Sam's Outdoor Park. You can find them on Facebook. It's really cool. They even have all of this, you know, all of the General Sam's, make General Sam's great again, you know, off-road craziness and all,
yeah,
this, you know, .com. It was nuts. But there are over 700 acres of trails. There's a general store. You can get ice. There's camping areas, you know, for electricity with water and sewer and all that stuff, hookups. They've got showers. They've got cabins you can rent. Ian's done a great job of putting in, you know, $300,000 worth of upgrades on this thing. Now, General Sam's been around for a lot of years, but it's only since last year that the new people have taken it over and really, really put a lot of money in it. And it's safe and it's clean. Like I said, nice showers, a lot of family stuff going on.
Yeah.
They have a Mother's Day, had a Mother's Day ride. They had something called Muddy Gras, which is, you know, Muddy Gras parties and stuff like that. They have an event. They'll have a Memorial Day ride. They'll have and it's just fun. And
yeah,
all summer, you know, actually, summertime, the most fun stuff is in the fall and the winter when it's chilly. And, you know, you can either go through sand and things like that, or you can go through waist deep mud and or just water. And it's just so many things. And they have a rock wall. And it's like, I think it's the highest place east of Dallas, I think, or something like that. It's one of the tallest areas in Texas. I think it's the tallest area up south of Dallas. And it is, it's a great place.
Did it really
like
is.
It, Eileen?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Didn't you like General Sam's?
Oh, I love General Sam. I absolutely loved it. And one of the things I kept hearing from automakers at the event was they couldn't believe all the stuff that was there. From the trails to the mud to the water to the sand, there was so much opportunity to do things that are different than what you normally see either when we go out to these programs and driving on a very specific course that's charted by the automaker or when we go out and do things on our own. There was just so much opportunity, and I kept saying, you know, it's a playground. Go play. Go have fun. Climb these rock walls. There's a really cool video that Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk put up on their YouTube page, and that shows this Chevy Colorado ZR2 Bison climbing rock ledges. And I actually went on the launch program for that vehicle, and we climbed some rocks in Arizona, but nothing nearly as tough as these ledges at General Sam's. And it's really cool to see exactly what that vehicle can do. And I really felt like General Sam's gave us the opportunity to kind of put everything to the test.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I did a drive-in review with the engineer of that vehicle, and it's, I mean, if you like low torque diesel engines. That thing is a powerhouse that they put in there on, in that Colorado. That thing was as durable as any truck that we had there at the Texas Off-Road Invitational. But all right, to our news and notes segment, and Eileen, let's talk about the Toyota Supra here. And this is something that Mike's talked a lot about over the years, about, you know, modification for vehicles and the ability to modify different certain either bikes or sports cars are hitting the market. You were there for the new launch of the Toyota Supra. It sounds like they're expecting their clients to do a lot of upgrades to that new vehicle.
Yeah, I literally left the Texas Off-Road Invitational and went straight to the Toyota Supra launch. Went up to Virginia for that, and we started talking about the Supra a couple years ago now, but really that foundation started in 2012 with BMW and Toyota coming together and working together on the new Supra, but also the new BMW Z4. And what they kept saying to us during the launch is that, you know, BMW and Toyota, you know, their vehicles aren't that similar and things like that. And, you know, you can take that for what it's worth, what they're saying, but they really talked about how both of those companies feel that their vehicles are in competition with Porsche's, which is fascinating that that was kind of their target audience. Yeah. And they see that the BMW Z4 is going after the Boxster, and that this Toyota Supra, the 2020 Supra, is going after the Porsche Cayman. And from a kind of a positioning standpoint, it's very interesting. You know, pricing is right there with it. But really, when we went and we drove through from just outside of D.C. by Dulles Airport, up through the rolling hills of Virginia, up to the Summit Point Motor Sports Park. And that's kind of like in the very tail of West Virginia. So we drove all the way up through these rolling rural roads, and the car just took to the streets with ease. It's really, really measured throttle response. You can really get up on it if you want to, but at the same time, pulling out from a stop sign with some loose gravel on a rural road isn't frightening. It's very easy to do. It translates to the road and track very well. So under its hood, it has a 3-liter inline 6-cylinder engine. That produces 335 horsepower and 265 pound-feet of torque. That's a whopper. I mean, it can get from 0 to 60 in 4.1 seconds. And I had the opportunity to test that up at the Motorsports Park track. And it is fun. It's got some zip to it. I mean, it's a good time. It's a really good time. That steering is so sharp and so good. And it's just begging for you to eat up road. It's a really, really good driver's car.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of right in that vein with what Toyota's always gone with the Supra, is that very driver-centric car. But at the same time, I had a few quibbles with it. And one of the quibbles was, I'm 5'6". I'm not by any stretch of the imagination real short, but I am, you know, average height, maybe a little below average. But I had such a hard time seeing over the hood of the car. Huh. And part of that was because the hood is high, but also there's this lip right at the windshield on the dashboard that kind of eats up another couple inches, and then the hood above the speedometer also takes up windshield space. And I was like, man, this is hard. Like, maybe I should grow a few inches. You know, let me see. Do I need to put, like, a phone book under my butt and drive that way? You know, what's going on? And then I looked over at my drive partner when he had time, and he was, like, doing the exact same thing, lifting his butt up when we go over a curve just to make sure he could see. And I was like, And Mike's a little bit taller than me, and I was just like, that's not great. That was one of my quibbles. The other thing is that the A-pillar looks so sleek on the outside, and man, is it a good design line. But when you're driving the car, it's really hard to see the corner that you're turning on. Now, if you're on a track and you know the way you're going, or if you're driving by home, that's pretty forgivable. But if you're trying to park it, parallel park it, or if you're trying, you know, turning around a rural corner that you don't know has a pothole, and you hit that pothole with that low profile tires on it and everything, that's a little iffy. I don't really care for that, but I get it from a design perspective. It looks hot. It's a good looking car.
Well, also, people are going to build that one up. I mean, all the tuners are going to have all these TRD parts, but, you know, so they've added extra wiring harness. They've added more access under the hood. They were like, okay, the tuners are going to get this thing. They're going to make it hot. We're trying to compete with the Porsches. We're trying to go, you know, kind of go live a little large. So they're going to make it a little bit easier for people to do that. So you don't have to, like, rebuild the car. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to have their whole line of TRD items for it. And their whole things like that. And one of the advantages of using the Toyota stuff is that, you know, you'll still keep your warranty. That's kind of a handy thing.
Well, what, so they actually did four tuner-specific nods in the new model to what those modifiers are going to do after the car goes on sale on July 22nd. And what they added was brace mounting points in the strut towers and the radiator core. Mm-hmm. So that adds extra clearance for the air filter housing and things like that. Space for the differential cooler. Exterior vents, which are currently plugged and kind of plugged with this black plastic that if you're really not within inches of it and looking at it, you don't realize, one, it's black plastic, or two, that it's plugging up something else. That those, if you literally just cut them, you can cut them with precision tools or something slightly less precise, like a Sawzall, if you really want to. Mm-hmm. And that you can pop that plastic out, and that'll give you the extra cooling for better performance if you're upping, you know, the engine capacity and things like that. There's also radiator openings that are larger than needed on the stock vehicle.
Right.
And all of that really plays into the design of, we want this great car that people can buy, and they can take it on the road, they can take it to track, and be perfectly happy with it. But let's be honest, the Supra has so much influence from the Fast and the Furious and that tuner and modification culture that it really just changed everything for them. And they wanted to not necessarily have all the parts available, but understand that there are aftermarket suppliers that are going to have all those parts available and really build it up for that.
Mm. Very cool, guys. All right, another thing that we had and we want to mention, Memorial Day is right around the corner. So here is our unofficial, you know, kickoff for summer here. And I wanted you guys to discuss a little bit about GM and Nissan. And, well, Mike, you and I did an interview last year that we still kind of talk about. It, yes. It broke our hearts about the number of deaths that happen when people, for some reason, do not realize that their child is in the back seat, and they go into, you know, into a grocery store or into their house or work or somewhere, thinking it's going to be a quick little in and out, and they wind up finding their child has overheated in their car. So the manufacturers are trying to take a pretty aggressive approach with this, and you know, here we have GM and Nissan both with this reminder technology. Hopefully, this is standard for all cars in the future, right?
Well, I think so, but also, you know, when you look at these things, like 52 deaths last year, that's just the deaths, not the injuries, and that's not pets. So think about this.
Yeah.
On a 70, one of them was a 67-degree day in Northern California, but a 70-degree day after 30 minutes at 104. And if you get it like here, like where you guys are, we are, on a 95-degree day in 30 minutes, it's 129 degrees in the car. But luckily, GM was the first one that jumped on this, and they have this thing when you open the back door and you set something on the back seat, or when, if just open the back doors, when you stop and you go to take the key out and you sort of walk away, it alarms, sends these alarms going, hey, check the back seat, check the back mm-hmm. seat. And it does leaves out the word idiot, but that's what they what's their meaning. And, you know, and then I know that's so great. I mean, it helps. But some of the other companies have even done more. Eileen, who else has the other stuff? Nissan, right?
So, yeah, Nissan has the rear seat reminder, and they actually developed that technology. It's a little different than what GM has. After one of their female engineers left a lasagna in the back seat and realized that if she could forget a lasagna, how easy it would be to forget a child. And that really alarmed them. And so they do a number of things. They do an exterior honking of the horn a series of honks that will alert you that the rear seat, as well as a visual reminder on the dashboard. One of the cooler technologies now is that Hyundai, and they debuted this in the new Santa Fe that came out, the 2019 Santa Fe, and it is an alert that can get sent to your mobile phone that will let you know that you need to check your back seat because a motion detector has detected that something is in your back seat, whether it's a child or an animal or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it also, you know, it's a really interesting concept where this is going to go. You know, obviously the iPhone or, you know, Android alerts are fantastic with the BlueLink app. But it's just a really interesting problem that seems to have an easy solution, but everyone seems to be realizing that we need to step up the game and get a little bit more technology involved to help save these lives.
Well, so that if your lasagna starts moving, it'll set it off too. But also, don't forget that also that motion detector sensor goes off. It'll go up to like 24 hours, I think. So, you know, a pet, even if it's in the garage or something like that, it's just how can you forget stuff like that? But I guess people do it, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, here in Las Vegas, every year the local news joke segment is they cook cookies on the dashboard of vehicles parked in the sun. Yes. And so just to illustrate the type of temperatures that we're dealing with in terms of, you know, vehicles, and how quickly it can get up to 300 degrees. Literally, it can be up to 300 degrees here in cars when it's 110 outside in Las Vegas in the direct sun. So, Yeah, it's definitely something that we'll talk about throughout the entire summertime. But as we get to the long weekend coming up here, you guys got to remember that, hey, just always check what's in your back seat. Always remember what you're doing and never, ever leave your kid in for a couple seconds saying, I'm going to run into a store or anything like that, because it's just so tragic when we have to report on these awful, awful stories. All right, one more story.
I was going to say, one other good thing to know is that if you are a parent who uses a daycare with your child, and they're a daycare that transports your children, maybe on field trips or things like that, we unfortunately do hear about daycares having this issue where they accidentally leave children in the daycare van or the bus. And those vehicles aren't always the newest with the best and latest technology like these rear seat reminders. So it might be worth it to ask your daycare, you know, provider, do you have a plan? Is this something you talk about? Is this something you train about to make sure you're doing a head count, to make sure all the children are out of their seat? What is your protocol? Just a whole nother step that parents can go through just to, you know, even bring that conversation up and to remind the daycare that it is a problem going into summer.
Guys, don't forget, if you ever see somebody with it, you're walking through a parking lot, I've now started to look into cars, and a little creepy, but I do it.
Sure.
And I look in there, and if I see a dog or see what in Texas, and I think most states have a Good Samaritan law, you can break the window, get them out, okay?
Yeah.
And you're not going to get in trouble for it. And, of course, whenever they come back, they're going to be arrested. So,
right.
I mean, you guys are legally can do it. I would, you know, call 911, they'll tell you what to do, but I can promise you, you're going to have to break that window and get that kid out.
It's really crazy. Coming up later on in the podcast, Mike Hurst is going to sit down with Jim Morrison with Ram, talk about the Ram Rebel winning the Texas Off-Road Truck of the Year. Really in-depth, long conversation about what Ram has coming down the table, coming down the pike, and really a fun conversation. So definitely stay tuned for that a little bit later on here in the podcast. But one more news nugget to get into, guys, and that is taking a look at the automatic emergency braking. And I got to be honest, and the role I play here with you guys is you know, I'm the novice guy, and I'm the person that doesn't have the technology background and the history that you guys have driving these vehicles. But I got to be honest, you know, I love the technology, but I'm getting concerned about the sensitivity of some of these, and you know, it could be on higher end, lower end, just my experiences with vehicles under 30,000 that have this automatic emergency braking. I feel like it's way too sensitive, guys, and I feel like it can almost – I almost got into an accident here in Vegas because a car was turning right, and I was simply going – I was nowhere near it, but they thought that it might be in the vicinity, and it slammed on the brakes, and I almost got rear-ended because of that.
Right.
And how does – I mean, what's interesting about that point with your insurance, I'm not sure if you guys know this or not, but, like, if that were to happen and somebody hits you, is it still the person behind you's fault? Like it is normally, if your AEB fires off and stops the vehicle short?
I don't know. I really don't know. You know, as a matter of fact, I will make a point of asking an insurance guy. But honestly, I had the same thing. We were on a divided highway, and it was a left turn where you cross over. And this guy, you know, jumped over to the left, and I was behind him just a few feet. And I was in a $60,000 or $70,000 vehicle, and it saw the person hit, and it slammed on the brakes. I looked behind me. There's an F-150 bearing down on me. I immediately hit the gas and overrid it. I've also had one where there are people coming towards you, and you're trying to, you know, cut across the lanes, and all this traffic's coming, and you go, I got plenty of room, I'll just zip across. It senses those people coming, and it hits you the brakes, and all of a sudden, you're in the middle of the intersection. Now, that's bad. But then again, all the good things are, you know, if you're getting on the freeway, you're looking over to your left, and the idiot in front of you stops, and you don't plow into him. Okay, of course, now the Suburban behind you might plow into you, but, you know, so it sets up. Now, once everybody has it, it may not be so bad, but right now it's a little bit sketchy. Eileen, have you had any things like that happen?
Well, what we're seeing is that on the cars that the technology has been modified to, so cars that maybe were developed 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, even 10 years ago on some of these models, and they're retrofitting the technology to the body style, you're seeing that technology isn't as good.
Yeah.
And that comes from everything from the driver assistive technologies like Nissan's ProPilot Assist to everything like this automatic emergency braking. And obviously the technology has changed over the last 10 years and certainly over the last 2 years or 3 years. So what we're seeing is that these new vehicles that come out, like for instance the new Chevrolet Blazer and things like that, you see that their automatic emergency braking is a little more precise. The technology's gotten better. The equipment has gotten better. Everything that goes into that seems to be harmonizing better.
Yeah.
Now, there is a sensitivity issue. Some models are much more sensitive, but that's exactly the same case as it is with adaptive cruise control. You know, sometimes you're creeping up on somebody and you've got it set to the narrowest point and you're still 100 yards away.
Right.
But, you know, other technologies, it gets you right up on their bumper and you're like, no, I need to back this off a little bit. So to each their own. But again, that's a perfect example of something that buyers should be aware of when they go to a dealership and they are test driving a vehicle. Test out those driver assistive functions and those safety technologies to make sure you're comfortable with them. Because things like the automatic emergency braking cannot be turned off.
Right.
Yeah. That is something you're going to have to live with every day. Unlike lane departure or blind spot monitoring, it cannot be turned off. So that's just another thing to add to your checklist when you go to a dealership to buy a new car or even a used car that's maybe 5, 6, 7 years old that had that first-gen technology. And you'll see how that works on the highway or even in traffic.
Well, let me add this, too, because you're right, you can't shut it off. However, and I'll review the Toyota CHR next week, the CHR actually has a sensitivity setting for it.
Right.
So you either can do it really far or really close. So at least you can't shut it off, but it seems like some of the manufacturers are starting to give you a little control as to how sensitive you actually want it to be, so you aren't dealing with what I had, which was somebody turning to the right, which was clear out of my path, but the vehicle unfortunately thought there was some type of impediment in front of me and slammed on the brakes. So at least they appear to be adjusting a little bit, right?
Well, there's a whole bunch of new generation. I just read today that the Nissan's got another generation of their ProPilot Assist coming out, getting ready to come out on next year. And everybody, I mean, the Cadillac one, I think it's called Super Cruise, it works really well. But I know they've got another generation of it coming out really quick. And
right.
So hang on just a little bit if you can, but you've got to know. It's kind of like buying a computer. When do you step off and buy a computer? Now, they're slowing down a little bit, but for years, remember, you'd buy a computer, and in 3 months, it was out of date.
Right.
And you're like, oh, I should have waited for this one. Well, this is gonna, you're kind of there now. When do you step off there and buy this? So
yep, very
it's,
true.
It's a lot of research to be done on which one is better than others.
All right, guys, it's time for automotive reviews. We all drove vehicles this week, and so this is fun. So, Mike, you and I know how we do our automotive reviews, but we're bringing in Eileen here. So I think you and Eileen have done reviews before, but I've never done a review before with Eileen. So this is kind of fun. I get to hear her. So, Eileen, I'm going to let you go first, all right? So tell us, what were you driving, and what did you think of the vehicle you had this week?
So I had the pleasure of driving a 2019 Fiat 500X last week. You say ooh.
Not like ooh. It was ooh.
Maybe you need to drive it, Mike. It actually, you know what, it's been upgraded for 2019. So it's not nearly the same car it used to be. It's got a turbocharged 1.3 liter inline four underneath the hood, 9-speed automatic transmission. This model came with all-wheel drive. It has a surprising 177 horsepower and 210 pound-feet of torque. It's got a little turbo lag off the start, but honestly, sufficient horsepower and torque to get you going on the highway much better than even some of the SUVs that haven't been redesigned recently.
Well, you know, they've always been pretty cool little cars, and I drove the Abarth on a racetrack just recently, and it was handled great, and it was fun, and I drove one of the regular ones, and they were okay, too, but you know, you know, they're great if you just look at who it's pointed at and who, you know, an in-town car to zip around. You can park two of them in one parking spot practically. My niece has one. She loves it. But, you know, it's not for everybody. If you're 6'5", it may not work with you.
Right. No. And it's got a 7-inch touchscreen normally. It's got Uconnect. It's got Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. But and it's got a ton of passenger space. But it all feels a little chintzy. It's got, I mean, the one I had was this bright blue color. I think they call it Iona blue. And it had this blue swath of plastic across the entire dashboard that was just so distracting when you were driving, especially when it was sunny out. And it's, you know, the seats are stiff. It's just, you get in, you're like, this just doesn't feel like, you know, mine was $27,000.
Oh.
And you're just like, this doesn't feel like $27,000. You can get a mid-grade Forester, a mid-grade RAV4, a Hyundai Kona, and you'll still have some change for like 15 Papa John's pizzas. you know, you can get a Chevy Colorado and have $6,000 in upgrades you add to it for $27,000.
Yeah.
And,
kicks.
You know, it looks cool, but I don't understand people who buy it paying $27,000 for it. And, you know, there's obviously a very small number of people who are buying it. Fiat is not doing well in the U.S. right now. But it's just, it's hard to make a business case for me that somebody would go to a dealership and look at it and go, that's what I want over everything else.
For the price.
Yeah. For the price. I know.
Oh, absolutely for the price.
They need a little work on that one a little bit. And
Well, I mean, Mikey, you and I made the joke about the electric version of that and how many incentives were available that you could buy a used electric one for $7,000 in California.
Yeah. I mean, one that was like had 15 or 18,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
I saw them for $5,500. So,
it
you know,
crazy.
What can I say? Well, she was stuck with that. Not stuck with it. She had the pleasure of driving that.
Yeah.
I had an Audi A7.
Oh, okay.
And this is a new vehicle. It's not a sedan anymore. It's now a hatchback. And it's called a Sportback. Good, sporty. And, you know, I opened the hatch in it and it was plenty of room. I love hatchbacks. I really do. Got a great silhouette. Got a great look. It had all this hot rod stuff and you know, spoilers in the front and a spoiler in the back and all that kind of stuff. It was really neat. Had a V6 with a 7-speed transmission. It runs great. But it's also a mild hybrid. People go, what? It's similar to that 48-volt hybrid that Ram uses. And this was the Quattro, so it was all-wheel drive. This was really cool. And it helped the fuel economy. It was, you know, for a hot rod, it really got decent fuel economy. I got in the mid-20s. Actually, on the highway, I get closer to 30 on it. It was great. And it was like the best of both worlds. It's spacious in sedan. It's kind of a sportback thing. But it still looks, if you look at it, you're thinking it's a coupe. But it's not. It's really cool. It doesn't have a lot of chrome, which kind of I think is better, okay? It's very subtle. And hot rod, man, it goes around a corner like it's on rail. You know, it has a spoiler in the back. And you think that's kind of cool, but actually it extends at speeds over 75 miles an hour. Now, not that I would ever go over 75 because that's the speed limit in parts of Texas.
You would never do that, Mike.
Yeah, that's right, LED headlights. You know, the taillights are really cool because it's like they're sequential and it's got 13 different LED segments across for the taillights. It's really cool. Little light animations you can see, and it's, you know, you hit the clicker and, you know, the remote, and it all kind of goes to the right and left, and it reminds me of some of the Mustang sequential taillights. But it's a new engine, and lots of torque, lots of power, 335 horsepower, 369 pound-feet of torque. But it does it like at 1,370 RPM, so it's really got some cojones taken off. The system works really well, but it has a lot of deals. You got all these different drive modes: auto, comfort, dynamic, and individual. So that way you can set it to do stupid things like Matt and I like to do. You can put suspension on some of them.
Yes.
But it has a lot of safety stuff. Adaptive cruise assist, top view camera like everybody has right now, the around view camera. It has intersection assist, okay? So it sees when you're pulling through an intersection, kind of goes, so like say you're going through the Walmart parking lot or whatever, Sam's Club or whatever you're doing, and yeah, people always kind of zip around. Well, it sees it and it'll stop you. Okay, all the way up to like 6 or 7 miles an hour with audio and visual warnings that speed up to 18.6. It's got turn assist. If you're turning and you're going to hit somebody, it'll hit the brakes for you. Collision avoidance assist. If it sees an accident, it will hit the brakes and steer you around it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, cool. Then it also has traffic sign recognition, so it says, oh, by the way, Matt, you're speeding. Here's the speed limit where it's supposed to be here.
Shut that off.
And even has a special spot for right turn on red. Okay,
yep.
It'll actually detect that. They have the audio pre-sense city, which is, you know, to pedestrian detection and things like that. Side assist, so blind spot it. It'll tell you if you're getting ready to pull over on somebody. It has, just like I believe the Hyundai has, it's got exit assist, which means you're getting ready to open up the doors and somebody's coming up behind you. It won't let you open the doors until they're passed.
Cool.
The Hyundai does that. It's a 1 or 2 second delay before it even let the door handles work. That's kind of cool. Rear cross-traffic assist and everything else. Now, that's the cool part. The maybe not so cool part is that mine was $85,240.
Hey, all right.
So how many of those 500s could you get for that?
But honestly, God, people love that. How many pieces can you buy for that?
Yeah. 20-inch wheel package. It has, you know, it had all these prestige package. I mean, it had the B&O sound system, which you could basically crank it up and blood can come out of your ears and it doesn't, you know, distort at all. And it's just great. It's just four climate control, four zones, not just one or two. It's four. Not that big of a car. I don't know if I had to figure that out. But it's just you can actually adjust the passenger seat. You have the, you know, the automatic memory seats for the driver. You can have that for the passenger side too. It's a nice vehicle for people that like European car. I mean, you look at this or a Mercedes, and I'm like, I gotta think for a minute, you know, because this is the fit and finish is gorgeous. It runs great. It's good fuel economy. Not that you'd buy it for that, but it's a gorgeous car and it turns heads. So even with me in it.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so you guys drove around
Wait
some
a minute,
fun.
You can't laugh like that. Come
yes,
on.
Again. So I got the pleasure, and I don't know who I made angry, but I had the pleasure of driving. And Hyundai did redo this vehicle, so I joked. But the 2019 Hyundai Accent SE. Okay, this is your college kid car.
Yes.
This is your first kid car. This is a car with a sticker price of $17,000.
That's sticker.
Base. Well, the base, that's sticker. So you can get it down to 14 or even who knows what incentives you could wind up getting this thing, drop it down
with a good
even
warranty,
more.
Too.
Yeah. This thing, I'm going to tell you, I had it with the automatic. It screams for a manual. You almost have to drive this thing in a manual. If you don't, if you can drive stick, I'm telling you, you're going to get a lot more performance out of the engine. It's quick off the line, but then it stops. It just bogs down. It has a tough time getting through its gears. It doesn't move the way you expect it to. It's not horrible merging onto the highway, but it's not great either. And I would have much rather have been able to just leave it in third gear and be able to kind of rev the RPMs up as high as I could to get up to speed getting onto the highway. Look, you're not going to get a ton of fancy features for a vehicle of this cost, but what you do get is the warranty, which is maybe more important if you're buying this for a kid next year, maybe going off to college, and you want to have a reliable vehicle. And if anything were to go wrong on it, Hyundai's covering it. The 5 years, 60,000-mile new vehicle warranty, the 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, which were great. The 5-year unlimited mile roadside assistance, which from a parent perspective will make you feel good if your kid is driving this thing maybe to and from college, putting in big miles. Gas mileage, what you'd expect on an engine of this size, which is 130 horsepower and 119 pounds of four cylinder pounds of torque, 32 miles on average, 38. I was getting 36 consistently, and Mike knows how I drive. So anytime you're getting good gas mileage, okay, I drive incredibly fast. I tend to hammer the engine. So if I'm getting 36 miles per gallon, you know, you might be able to get
what
even
would a
better.
Get?
Yeah, even a better person, you'd be able to get even more. Some of the base features, which are nice, you got your 5-inch touchscreen infotainment display, which is nice. If you go up to the SEL or the Limited, you're going to be able to get Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Those are add-on features. This vehicle did not have it, but it's something that I am a huge proponent of. Every vehicle should have these things standard. How much we live on our phones, how much our ability to use those navigation systems and use text and talk to text and whatnot. I really do think that should be standard, but it's the next level up. That's hopefully something that they'll make in the SE base model at some point in the future from a base perspective. But you know, you can get it's $18,000, and the limit is about $20,000 for some little extra bells and whistles, some nicer interior, a little bit of a better engine, a little more horsepower if you want to go up into that world. But if you just want a very base strip down, you know, you have a touchscreen, USB, you know, a couple of USB ports, an auxiliary port, which is nice, which is in there. I didn't feel like the vehicle was unsafe, but I felt like the vehicle was small in the back seat, and it's tight. So they want it to be seen as a sedan. I would have rather have seen this thing almost as a hatchback to give you some more room in the back seat and to give you some more cargo space. So, I mean, given how often we've seen these vehicles go with hatchbacks, I was surprised Hyundai is not doing that with this vehicle, and they're just doing it with a sedan model only. What?
Well, it's important to remember with the Accent.
Yeah.
With the Accent, that's actually going to be parallel to the new Hyundai Venue, which is coming up later this year. They just debuted that at the New York Auto Show, and that's going to be their subcompact crossover that fits even below the Hyundai Kona. So a lot of automakers are now eschewing the hatchback and going toward putting the hatch into their subcompact crossover and letting people have just the sedan as a variant. I think it's probably a cost-saving measure, but also trying to kind of figure out where the market is with that. They're trying to play both of them and see what's going on.
Also, the only advantage of a sedan over a hatchback, there's very few, but is you can lock stuff in the trunk. But also, did they have a manual shift option on the automatic where you can, you know, either at the
No, there's no throw. To throw it to the left and go in a manual with paddle shifters.
Well,
no.
Paddle. Some of them do it on the stick. But
yeah, no, this is just a straight, you know, there wasn't even a drive mode on this vehicle. It's not even like if you want to, as you know, I always love to put things in sport mode as much as possible. There's just, you know, straight one drive mode.
As possible. How about all the time?
on the engine. You know, so you got your power door, you know, outside mirrors and door handles. You know, you've got your... what they call it hill assist control, which is you're leaning back, you're on a hill. It's an automatic, so it shouldn't be that big of an issue with that. Your Bluetooth for your hands-free phone system, the air conditioning, which is always really important. I do want to tell every automaker, and Toyota's in the same boat as here, you need more than one or two USB imports on these vehicles when they're new. You know, in particular, we're talking about a vehicle of this price point. This is a millennial type of car. This is a kid type of car where they're going to want to have two, three, four, five things plugged in at once. So I would say that's one knock on this vehicle that I would like to see more USB inputs being put forth to be able to have it. But, you know, this had a key, and it's always strange to me when it's on a key fob, but it's a key fob to unlock the vehicle, and you know, but you have to insert the vehicle and turn the key, which is still so strange to me whenever that happens on a 2019 model. But that's what it has. I do love just the ability of throwing a key anywhere I want on my backpack, you know, in my pocket, whatever, and be able to start the vehicle without having the key fully out. So that's one thing that I think from this price point you'd expect it, but it is something of a new vehicle, a little bit of a different piece. So overall, college kid, first car, just out of college, great gift vehicle, safe vehicle with great warranties that are going to keep you safe with roadside assistance and whatnot. So the 2019 Hyundai Accent SE is what I was driving around in. Okay, guys, before we get to the interview with Jim Morrison that Mike Herzing did, any other things you guys want to bring up, you guys want to reference this week for our podcast?
Well, we can have some car questions if you have time.
You want to do some car questions?
We can do a couple.
Well, that would mean that Matt needs to pull up the car questions. So let me go pull up the car questions before you throw. See, this is why we throw curveballs at.
Here,
well, no, it's good to throw a curveball at me, and then I can wind up having an opportunity to do this to have conversations.
You know, my Rolls Royce only had two USB ports too. But I
are you serious?
Yeah,
that's horrible.
Not the customer that gets a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, that's that. Well, they will.
But
be
you
soon.
Have to remember. You have to remember, every Cullinan is made bespoke. You can actually put as many USB ports as you want in there, and they will make it for you. They do not sell any base models.
That makes sense.
So, so what you see, you can absolutely change absolutely everything about that car. It's absolutely crazy, but it's wondrous. I love the Cullinan.
I know.
How can you
not? The paint job alone was $11,500.
$4,000.
And that's not even the good color. That's
right.
The red. That's not the good one.
All right, let's get to a couple of car questions before we get to the interview with Jim Morrison. Speaking of Jim Morrison, let's start with a question from Ken, who, by the way, you can go to letstalkwheels.com and send in these questions, and we'll answer them here on the podcast for you guys. Ken wants a new Jeep. Dealers don't have any stock available, almost impossible to find a deal on. Where can he find a good deal on a hot vehicle like this, and do you recommend buying car services like Sam's Club and Costco Auto?
You know, Costco and Sam's, believe it or not, they're great. AAA, all those guys, they make deals. And it's hard to find a deal on a Jeep. Now that the Wrangler has been out for a while, the JL, and it's going to – their prices are dropping a little bit. But they have – it's one of the few vehicles, that and the Tacoma and a couple other vehicles, that it's probably better off to buy a new one because the used ones are so – they don't ever lose value. I mean, so you can buy one with 200,000 miles, and it's 10 years old, and they want $18,000 for it. And they'll get it. And so this is one of those vehicles that, but also check out the Sam's Club deal and Costco and all those guys, because I have people that just tell me that they got killer deals. So why not?
Eileen, have you heard much good things about Costco or Sam's Club for automotives?
I absolutely have. But one of the things is, so I actually do a bunch of deals articles and look at the best incentives it offers every month all across the country. And one of the things I found is that when you go on the website and you're looking up the deals and you're trying to build your model and all of that, you put your zip code in, and you always look for you put your home zip code in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're looking to save some money, shop around the country. Find some zip codes maybe in places that you wouldn't mind going, maybe near your parents' house if it's out of state. You know, hey, it's $100 for me to fly to Arizona. I'm going to fly to Arizona and buy a car there and maybe save $5,000 or $6,000. Well, that's worth taking a couple days off of work, flying to Arizona and driving it back.
Sure.
There's a lot of things like that you can do that people don't necessarily think about. Buying a car, look at Chicago, look at Detroit, especially if you're looking for something that is a domestic model. Look for those places that are a little off the beat. You know, Buffalo, New York. You can get some great deals on cars in Buffalo, New York. But it's a place you don't think about. But it's cheap to fly there. It's easy to buy a car there. You can call them, have exactly what you want in stock. They'll hold it for you. You fly up, get one of those cheap Southwest Airlines deals. It's right there for you. So, yes, it is hard to find a deal on a JL right now. Yes, it is worth the money. But also, there are ways to get better deals, but it's just the deals on that model are few and far between because it's just a hot Jeep.
Yeah, they are.
Interesting.
And don't go to Vegas
cool.
and get a deal because you'll end up spending more money.
That's very true. You lose it. You lose it in the casino that you're staying in. You may cost you the price of the vehicle. One more question before we wrap, guys. Tony has a Subaru with 91,000 miles. Told it needs a new timing belt at that mileage. Does he has to do this job? It's a lot of money. He's wondering, Mike, are there other cheaper ways of getting by here by not replacing the timing belt?
No, never do that because the timing belt is rubber belt. It will break. It's supposed to replace it at 90. And if it breaks, it's liable to bend valve it. And I think that's an interference engine, which means the camshaft timing and the crankshaft timing are out of phase when the belt breaks because the belt turns the camshafts. And what happens is the valve might be stuck open. The piston comes up and smacks it. Okay, that's not good. And when you do the belt, somebody may give you a better price and all that stuff. You want to use an original equipment belt. But also, while you're there, change the cam seals, change the crank seal, change the water pump. Do that stuff so that way you don't have to worry about it for 90,000 miles. Just forget it, okay? And that's what you do. But don't ever just change the belt because then a few, 5,000 miles later, 90,000 miles, how long is the water pump going to last? How much longer? I don't know. But if you replace it right then because it's basically just the parts labor, that's all you're just buying the parts, there's no real labor to get to it. You've all got stuff that's just hanging out there. Okay, if one of the cam seals starts leaking, when the seals get about 8 or 9 years old, they'll start leaking. If it leaks oil under the belt will break. But then you're back to square one. So just do the entire job, do it correctly. You may spend, $700, $800, $900, maybe $1,000, and just get it done and not mess with it because that's one of those vehicles that'll last 180,000 miles easily.
Absolutely. Spend the money now so you don't end up spending more later.
Yes.
You're saving your time or worth spending a little bit more now to not have to worry about it and know you are good to go for the next 90,000 miles and beyond.
That's it, especially if you use original equipment parts.
Very cool. All right, Mike, Eileen and I are going to step aside here. You're going to talk to Jim Morrison from Ram. Give us a quick preview as to what you guys talked about.
Well, the Ram Rebel, which is a neat model that they came out with. It's a hot rod. It's an off-road vehicle. And it won the Texas Motor Press Association Texas Outdoor Invitational. And it won it pretty easily, not easily, but it was a great vehicle. Well, this is a real treat, folks. We've got my good friend Jim Morrison, and the Ram Rebel just won the Texas Motor Press Association's Off-Road Truck of the Year at our event, the Texas Off-Road International, last week. And I tell you what, it really was well-deserved. Welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, Jim.
Hey, great to be on the show.
All right, now, you guys, tell us about the Ram, the Rebel. I mean, this is something, how did you think of, hey, I'm going to build an off-road kind of truck, and it's really wild? I mean, you guys have all these, the history of making a lot of neat sub-models, sort of, different versions. And how did the Rebel happen?
Well, you know what, Rebel happened kind of as a natural extension of the Ram brand, and certainly talking to a lot of our customers. As you know, we're a standalone brand that just focuses on trucks, and we get to have one-on-one conversations almost every day with our customers, and they're always asking us to push the limits of their trucks. So whether it be a light-duty truck or a heavy-duty truck, we're always understanding kind of what they're looking for next. And we've got a long history of off-road packages and off-road trucks. We have the King with Power Wagon, and when we're talking to our light duty customers, they kept asking us for more off-road capability. And it's, for the guys that are going out hunting on the weekends, wanted to get to that crazy fishing spot, or just wanted to do some wheeling and have fun taking their truck off-road, that the Rebel was really designed for, is just delivering that. So, obviously the new Ram 1500 is all new for 2019. So when we look behind the scenes as to what we would do with Rebel, because it had launched a few years earlier, we wanted to make sure that we upped the capability. It's not just a good-looking, rugged truck with a lift, which it is, of course. It's okay. Got the lift and the rugged look with the steel bumpers and the skid plates under the truck. Of course, it's got incredible rubber with the Duratrax, and it has a 1-inch or a 2-inch lift with the air suspension if you want. But it's really we took it to the next level again. We put a rear locker in it as well, and that combined with the new Duratrax tires really took the capability to the next level with this truck. So, you know, you've got all of the good looks and rugged looks that you'd expect from a Ram off-road truck, but it's also got some real off-road chops with all of that content. And I think one of the things that a lot of guys really like is the Bilsteins off-road. You know, whether the truck is on the air or on the ground or in between, those Bilsteins really really settle down the truck and make it work really good off-road.
Well, you know, that's a really good suspension, and that's, you know, that stuff's not cheap. But what's funny is the truck is not your most expensive truck by any means. It's reasonably priced. And a lot of times you have companies come out with something like you're doing, and the price is stupid. It's crazy. People can't touch it. But you guys have seemed to have made it pretty affordable.
Yeah, you know, it's a $45,000 truck in a quad cab with steel suspension. Still, you get the locker and the lifts and the cool rugged rubber. But yeah, pretty reasonable starting from point. And again, that was just listening to our customers, because, you know, people that have that active lifestyle also, you know, wanted to make sure that they had a good range. You know, they didn't want to be a $65,000 or $75,000 or an $85,000 truck to have that capability. So we tried to deliver that for them here with Ram.
You know, I tried to explain to somebody what truck it was, and I said, if you ever watch NCIS Los Angeles, they drive one, the red one, exactly like it on the show, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes, yeah, they had done the program for a while for sure, and they took Ram off the tailgate, kind of bugged me, but other than that, it's a really good representation of the truck. And the neat thing about it is Rebel fits in nicely on the streets or off-road, which is really cool. Not all the trucks can do that.
Well, what are the tires on it? Because one thing I did notice, we took it out on the street, on the road, and they're super quiet on the road, on the highway, which normally when you get an off-road type tire that works really good off-road, you lose a little bit on the highway and you add a lot of noise. These things seem to be a really good mix.
Yeah, they're 33-inch all-terrain Goodyear Duratrax. And we spend a lot of time, you know, with Goodyear you know, making sure that it was perfectly tuned for the Rebel, and that's, you know, because you want to have a good rugged tire that looks really good, but it also has to perform, and then have a balance of, you don't want it to be humming to sing your favorite song down the highway either. So it does a really good job. Doesn't need a whole lot of wheel speed to fire the mud out of it. Keeps the big lugs clean. As you're going through mud, it's actually really good to air down and crawl across rocks as well. And, of course, it's got its kind of signature, sidewall with the grabbers on the sidewall, too. So it's a good tire all around, and a really good fit for the Rebel.
Okay, first we're talking to Jim Morrison, the VP from Ram Trucks, about the big win they got at the Texas Motor Press Association's Texas Off-Road Invitational. And it was funny, as you guys also won Truck of the Year on the actual Ram 1500. I think it was the Laramie Longhorn for Truck of the Year as far as our vote in the fall. So you guys have just been, you know, batting 1,000 with the Texas Motor Press. The journalists, you know, there's like 35 journalists who voted on this, and they were very, very impressed with the Ram and the folks you had out there talking about the Ram. That's the other thing, being able to disseminate that information to journalists so they can understand it, and that way we can give it out to the public. That's a big deal. But the Ram was just, I can't say it was a surprise, because it was up against the Chevy Colorado Bison. It was up against the Nissan Pro 4X. It was up against the Toyota Tundra. It was the Chevy Silverado. It was the GMC Sierra AT4. So all of these were, you know, they were all gunning for you, but you guys just ran away from it. I mean, the big kudos go to you guys. Now, I have a question, Jim.
Yes.
All your guys on weekends, yeah, it's funny, you're one of the one companies that every weekend your guys take out your trucks, and they all own them, and they go out there and they do everything they can with them, especially Nick Kappa. He'll go out there and do crazy things with that vehicle. How much of their input comes in designing a vehicle like this?
You know, we are always looking to upgrade our trucks and to give you know, the customers exactly what they're looking for. And of course, having and owning them and driving them every day is part of being, you know, part of the Ram team and part of being the ownership. But I think a couple things. One is it gives us very direct input into, hey, you know, why don't we do this with the truck? But most importantly, it gives us the credibility and starts the conversations and the right conversations, you know, with our customers to say, hey, you know, I've noticed this with my truck. What do you feel like? Or you're in a situation where you're, you know, taking the truck off road, you know, whether it be trying to find your favorite fishing spot or, you know, with your buddy.
Right.
You know, he happens to take his competitive product in there. He only makes it in, you know, halfway. He's got to climb in the back of your box of your Ram to get to the fishing spot because he doesn't have a locker or the right rubber on it and or enough lift, you know, but, you know, then it starts those conversations, and that's what's really fun about being part of a truck brand because, you know, you work your trucks, you know, whether it be on the weekend hauling trailers or, right. You know, going out and taking it off-road. You know, the whole team is doing something, you know, somewhere every weekend, and it's great to have that connection with our customers and the feedback, you know, kind of direct to our engineers and design office.
Well, you know, you and I were talking about the tires, the wheels, but we haven't really entered into the four-wheel drive system. And now, it used to be head of Jeep, okay? And Jeep had probably the best four-wheel drive system on the market right now, especially for the price, okay? And everybody knows that. That's pretty simple. They've been building them since my 46 model, you know, which was parked next to one of the Jeeps there at the event. How much input do you get from the Jeep guys on your four-wheel drive system? Did you use some of their technology?
Well, certainly there's the core competency of this company, you know, Fiat Chrysler, you know, and you walk around Auburn Hills and you bump into engineers and designers that kind of work, you know, in their career between Jeep and Ram. And certainly, you know, a lot of that technology and that expertise is transformed between, you know, the brands that use that off-road capability the most. And that's Jeep and Ram. And, you know, just to use an example, the rear locker,
right.
We added to it here for 2019 that in the past hadn't had. And, you know, although Power Wagon, you know, has had it for a few years, you know, the rear lockers is something that, Wrangler kind of spearheaded and we applied to Grand Cherokee as well, you know, in order to really keep the truck moving in those circumstances where you need to have more bite. And, you know, particularly given a pickup truck, you know, can get a little bit light in the rear end if it doesn't have a lot of stuff in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice to have the rear locker, you know, really have both those wheels move at the same speed and keep the truck moving forward no matter what kind of conditions you're in.
Okay, now, if you explain to the listeners what a rear locker is, and not everybody would know that. I do, but you explain it because you do it so well.
Well, basically, it's a button on the dash that you push and that it engages a real mechanical locker in the back so that both the left hind and the right hind wheel will travel at the same speed. So whether you be on mud on one side or in deep mud and a little bit of gravel on one side, you know, if with competitive vehicles, if you didn't have a locker, you know, one wheel is, we call it split mu situation, or one wheel is slippery. So one wheel would spin and then it would take all the power, you know, from the axle and scrub it out through the wheel that's just spinning, and you basically have a four-wheel drive that's a two- or a three-wheel drive, and the rear wheel would just spin. Right. With the locker, it actually makes sure that both the left hind and the right hind are moving at the same speed and keeps the truck moving forward. So it balances out the conditions and really makes the truck get extra grip to keep it going forward.
Well, I know that.
Nothing worse than getting stuck in a truck.
My son has a little vehicle that has a rear locker, but it stays. It's not a push button. So when you go around a tight turn, it kind of chirps the tires a little bit. It's a little tough on the locker, but it's off-road. It's awesome. And your vehicle, I mean, it did everything, anything else. It did everything the Jeep would do. It did everything the Land Rovers would do. It was a beast. And, you know, that's a big truck. I mean, it seems to be being able to put the power to the actual ground. And a lot of it has to do with the Hemi, right?
Yes, for sure. It's really nice to be able to put all that power to the ground. You know, we've got the standard V6 with e-torque, and that's something that's really helped the Hemi with the Rebel off-road. So a normal Hemi, for example, you know, gets its electric assist with it, with the what's called e-torque, or basically a mild hybrid technology. So if you have, you know, the regular Hemi gets 395 horsepower, you know, 410 pound-feet of torque. And to that, we add another 90 foot-pounds of torque to the Hemi. So when you get it going at slow speeds, the electric engine will kick in, and off-road, it will really help get the truck rolling. And that when the electric kicks in, sorry, it's 130 pound-feet of torque. Thanks, Steve. It really helps smoothly get the power to the ground, and as you can imagine, the electric assist is instant. So, you know, whether you're crawling up a big rock or starting to move a big trailer or grinding through mud, it's great to have that extra torque. That's what we call it, e-torque, because it adds an electric torque to the already very potent Hemi V8.
You know, that's an awesome V8. But your V6, I've driven the... And one thing is, with the e-torque, I end up getting 23 miles per gallon. And a lot of it was in town, in 22, 23. I mean, way over 20. And I'm just going, it really does make a difference. And it seems to, maybe it's my magic, smooth out the shifts. And when your vehicle, a lot of them, we have the stop-start thing, which we're all going to have to live with one of these days. When yours integrates and you let off the brakes and you go to, you know... let off the brakes and it starts, it seems to be a little bit more seamless than everybody else's. Is that because of the e-torque system?
Yes, it is for sure. Two reasons. One is we were really, again, talking to our customers, nobody really wanted ESS, right? And nobody really wanted to be sitting at a light and have their truck shake as it turned off.
Right.
And that's kind of how the competitor systems work.
Sure.
And so we were working really hard with our engineers to make sure that that doesn't happen. And one of the ways to smooth that out is that electric fills the gaps in the shifts. So it really does a nice job of getting the truck rolling and then filling the shift. So the truck is shifting. It's actually, you know, the electric motor kicks in. At the same time, it's shifting between first and second or second and third.
Uh-huh.
And really does a nice job of smoothing out the truck. And what it does do is with that electric assist, it gets 2 miles per gallon better.
Right.
On the highway and combined fuel economy, because it's capturing regenerated energy when the truck is braking, stores it in 248 volt batteries behind the seat, and then feeds it back to the truck when the truck starts rolling. So it does a really nice job of improving fuel economy. So you get a little extra feel of power and torque, and then. You get to actually get better fuel economy and 2 miles per gallon. So in my world, we call that having your cake and eating it too.
Yeah, no kidding. Now I have a question. Now I know your V6 is really capable, but you've also, I mean, in the past you've had the Eco Diesel. Do you see that coming back?
Yeah, the Eco Diesel will be back for the lineup later in the year. In fact, we'll be introducing it maybe even on the truck we're talking about here now. World doesn't know that yet, but the Eco Diesel is coming back for DT, and can't wait to get that. It's a great powertrain, and likes lots of torque and gets great fuel economy.
Okay, now before we let you go, I want to change the subject just a little bit. You guys are selling the brand new 2019 new generation Ram with the big screen and all the safety features and everything else, and that's great. And it's an awesome vehicle, and it's won, like I said, the Texas Truck of the Year and things like that. But you also sell on the classic versions, which is the last generation, and that is so priced so well. Sales are going crazy, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a combination of both the new truck and old truck, but so far for the year, I'm happy to report that the Ram brand sales are up 25%. What's really cool is we're bringing in new customers, you know, to the brand, and one of my things I'm most proud of here at Ram is we have the highest loyalty now in the half-ton segment for 3 years. So as we bring those new customers on board, you know, they'll enjoy what their Ram delivers and put the Ram hat on the weekend and, you know, be part of the Ram family. And we intend on keeping them around for quite a long time. And, you know, whether they come into the Ram brand as a, you know, in our classic model. We've got a cool new Warlock all blacked out for that we just introduced. But we also, or if they're coming in because of all of the, have the best safety tech or the best technology with their 12-inch radios, or whether they're looking for the most capable heavy-duty. I haven't talked too much about that, but, you know, we've got the most capable heavy-duty truck in the marketplace now, 1,000 pound-feet of torque with our new Cummins. You know, it'll haul 35,100 pounds better than anybody in the heavy-duty segment. It's also got more payload than anybody. And so if you're looking for a real work truck, we've applied all that cool luxury and technology to that, too. So it'll work hard and play hard with our new heavy-duty. But great lineup for the Ram brand right now, for sure. But when those customers come to us, we plan on keeping them around for a long time.
You know, it's funny. I was at a wedding the other day, and this is something that you go back 5 or 6 years, you didn't see. But there were like 12 or 13 trucks, I think 13 trucks, and seven of them were Ram trucks. You know, light duty,
yeah,
heavy duty, and there was a Toyota, and then there was a few Chevys, and then a Ford or two, and I was like, I'm like, oh my gosh, it looked like, and there was Jeeps everywhere, and I'm like, this looks like an FCA convention. And you know, you didn't see that years ago. You guys are just really doing a great job of reaching the customer. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure. I think you know, it's you helping your circle of friends too. Probably need to thank you, Mike, for doing that. I know you're you know, a good influence in that regard as well. But I think, you know, again, just, you know, keeping them loyal and introducing new customers. And I think the other thing that I would say to you is, you know, 10 years ago, it probably wasn't politically correct to show up at a wedding or to try to stuff your wife or wife and mother-in-law into the front seat and the back seat of a pickup truck to take them to a wedding. But I would say to you now that it's probably the best thing you could take them to.
Yes.
You know, you open up the front door and to let your wife or mother-in-law in, you know, to the truck, and you open up and there's real wood, real leather, power running board, and it's probably better than most people's living rooms, and you know, surround themselves with opulence, and you know, your mother-in-law will look at you like you've you know, got a good living for your wife and all that kind of good stuff. But you can politically correct and in a nice way, you know, show up at a wedding with a luxury truck, and it fits right in. It's probably one of the coolest and best vehicles to have at a wedding. And you can do it in class. That's one of the nice things about pickup trucks. All the technology that is, we've come on, it's no longer just a work implement. It's something that you can enjoy your life, any aspect of it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Andre from TFL at the event, and he goes, everybody in Texas drives a pickup truck for a family car. And I said, they're more comfortable. They get just as, you know, I get 1 mile per gallon less than driving a little SUV. It rides good. I can see over traffic, and if I have an accident, I'm in something that's very safe and big. People love little cars, but when you get sandwiched between an F-150 and a Suburban runs in the back of you, being in a little car isn't exactly the most exciting thing. But my wife drives a Ram 1500 four-wheel drive. And the other day, last weekend, we had some people over at the lake, and it was real muddy. We'd had all this 8 or 9 inches of rain. She's the only vehicle I could get to where we needed to go. And so everybody jumps in her Ram, and they go. And it was great.
Yes, and that's a great illustration of just what it's, because I have said this a million times, is just everybody needs a truck.
Yeah.
You know, as your example, you know, getting your group to, you know, through the mud and through the rain, you know, the same thing happens for when you need to put stuff in the back. And, you know, in the past, you know, you have to go and, you know, bug your neighbor or bug your brother-in-law or whatever happens to have one, because you couldn't deal with the fuel economy and the ride, you know, of the truck, and live with it every day. But today you can. I mean,
no trade-offs.
Today's half-ton trucks ride better than most cars did even 5 years ago. When you think about it, they actually get better fuel economy than cars did 4 or 5 years ago. So there's no reason why you can't just have a truck and put it in your driveway and enjoy, you know, what you need to, and then be ready when it rains. Get ready for, you know, when you'll have to tow your utility trailer or your horse trailer, and you know, enjoy you know, a little bit of recreation with it, or also, you know, God forbid you're in an accident, you know, wow, you've got a lot of truck around you to keep safe, and you know, the Ram will do whatever it can to avoid you, you know, with forward collision warning, blind spot warning, you know, top safety ratings, five-star crash ratings, all of that good stuff. But if you do happen to get in an accident, it's ready to protect you for sure.
Well, you got all that towing, assisting, and things like that. But you know, the best thing is I'm in an $85,000 Audi right now that doesn't get as good a fuel economy as the Ram got. And so, granted, you know, people that spend $85,000 don't care about fuel economy, but it's just a good example that pickup trucks get 20 miles to the gallon now, 20, you know, whatever. I mean, that's a four-wheel drive. It's just amazing what you guys have done with technology.
Well, and that is absolutely what's bringing more people to the truck segments. And I think the owners and drivers and customers in Texas just figured it out first, because I think everybody you know, kind of wants to be cool like the Texans can. Yeah. But I think the other thing, you know, compared to your Audi, I would take the interior of a limited or Longhorn pickup truck,
right,
and I would put it toe to toe. I don't even know what kind of Audi you're in, but I would put it toe to toe with any Audi in the marketplace.
It's an A7.
And I would say that it has a nicer interior, more real wood,
yes,
more real leather.
Yes.
You put metal around the speaker grills. It's got a 19-speaker, 900-watt surround system with a 12-inch the 12-inch radio with on-demand Sirius radio. The Audi, I know, doesn't have anything that I just talked about, let alone the fit and finish that we put in our new trucks. It's just incredible that you can, you know, show up at that wedding, you know, with your Ram. Yeah, it's going to be a $60,000 limited or Longhorn, but it'll be way better off than that $70,000 Audi. And wait till it rains, or wait till you have to tow something with it. You're all set and ready to go with the Ram.
We had 7 inches worth of rain the other day, and the roads were flooded. You can get through with a pickup truck. You know what, Jim? Thank you for everything. Thank you for all the support you've given Let's Talk Wheels. And thank you for making such a cool truck that wins the Texas Off-Road Truck of the Year and the Texas Truck of the Year from the Texas Motor Press Association. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thank you again for the award with the Rebel, with the Texas Motor Press, and our Longhorn win to start the year is one of the first wins to kick off the new truck. So really appreciate everything you guys do for us, too, and great talking to you.
Yeah, Jim, thank you. And wait till you see the trophy. You're going to love it. All right, guys.
Can't wait.
That was Jim Morrison, Vice President of Ram Trucks, and we'll be right back. We got more coverage of the Texas Off-Road Invitational. Hey, Jimmy.
Yes.
That was awesome. Thank you very much. And, man, everything you do is great, and you're awesome. So,
hey, great talking to you.
It's 25-minute. We're going to do it over two segments, and it'll be great. And I will email you a picture of the trophy you're going to get.
Awesome.
You're going to want copies of it because it is an oil derrick. You know,
we'll put it loud and proud in our trophy case.
It will be. You probably ought to put it at some auto shows because it's going to be it's a stunner.
That's what I'm talking about. It'll go to all the auto shows.
Yep. All right, buddy. I'll text you the picture stuff and like that this afternoon. But talk to you later, buddy.